You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New Zealand has one of the highest rates of obesity in the world. But how much does advertising have to do with it? A health expert is calling for greater government regulations around how food is advertised, especially to children. I spoke with Professor Jim Mann from the University of Otago about advertising, the difficulty around food and social media, and what the government can do to help people make more informed decisions around their diet. I began by asking him how people in Aotearoa are getting their information about food. And actually before that, in all my excitement about my voting, I forgot to say, hea ofakaro, if you have any thoughts to share throughout the show, we'd love to hear from you. And tuku pātui mai, send through a text 5395 or YMI, you can call the studio to chat with one of us on 309-3879. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter at 95BFM News. Here is Jim Mann.
If they choose to go somewhere reliable, they can get very good, sensible messages about sensible eating. But the problem is that a lot of people are getting their messages from food manufacturers who are there to make money for their shareholders, or they're getting money from sort of alternative so-called experts who have some potential for benefiting from their advice. So, I mean, the manufacturers of junk food are telling people that it's, particularly kids, that it's wonderful to have, you know, high sugar, high fat things that taste good and they're going to give them energy. Or for that matter, energy drinks, which is another potential for false advertising. So that's one place. And then the other place is these social media sites or sites that you can find on the internet one way or another. Which tell you that the latest kind of diet fad is what is going to make you lose weight or whatever. And those sites are either run by some well-meaning, misguided people, or they're run by people that are going to make a fast buck or maybe long-term bucks. Authoritative organizations are putting out good health messages. You know, you can get messages from the Ministry of Health or from various organizations like the Heart Foundation or Diabetes New Zealand, but you can get them from these alternative sources as well. So it's a, people find it really hard.
What sort of regulations are there currently for how they advertise and how they kind of portray their food to be?
Yeah. Well, there are advertising standards. I mean, New Zealand, like any country, has got advertising standards. And you can complain, and I do from time to time, complain about people that have been falsely advertising. But in general, companies are pretty careful and don't overstep the mark. And this is really the problem. Governments, successive governments, have adopted the line that this should all be voluntary, so they're voluntary standards of conduct, and that the industry should be self-monitoring. But it doesn't really seem to work, and includes sort of times that you know, advertising can take place on television. And there is a voluntary code which says, you know, the times that kids are in theory watching television, you won't advertise junk food. But kids don't just watch television when they're meant to be watching television. They watch television when their parents are watching television. So, I mean, it's a kind of nonsense concept, really. So the bottom line is there's actually very little actual control on advertising. And, I mean, even if you take, you know, there's the Health Star rating, for example, which is an Australia-New Zealand system, which in theory is quite good on food products. So, you know, you can have a 4 or 4.5 star product, or even in theory a 5-star product that's meant to be a good product, and you can advertise it for that. But even that can be misleading, because, and that's a government sponsored.
Well, I was going to ask about that, because yeah, you walk around the supermarket and you see, well, this has 4.5 star health food rating. This one only has 3. I guess I'll go for the 4.5 star. It's got to be better for me. But how do these ratings actually work?
Yeah. Well, they are, I mean, conceptually it's a good idea, because how do we know whether a breakfast cereal is a good breakfast cereal or not a good breakfast cereal? And so it's an aggregated index of what might be considered generally healthy. So good idea. Why does it fall down? Well, it falls down for two basic reasons, and there may be other reasons as well, but two obvious ones. One is the way the formula works is that you can put a lot of fiber in, because fiber is good, to give it a good score. But then you can also put a lot of sugar in, and you can keep sugar just low enough, but still have a very high sugar product, to get that score, that good score. So basically what a company can do is just add some more fiber, and that allows a lot of sugar to go in. So they're looking at that now. They are reviewing this whole system, this black box that the numbers go into to come out with a star rating, and hopefully it will be a better system. The other thing, of course, is that it's voluntary. If you're a company, you're not going to put it on a cereal that's going to get one star, because you know that that's going to give your cereal a bad name. So it really, if it's really going to be effective, it should be compulsory. And the second thing is that at very least, they need to get around this glitch, which I'm sure wasn't done intentionally by those people that put the Health Star rating together, but they didn't think ahead, and that is that people were going to try and work the system, which they clearly are. And then lots of examples. I think the example I've given you is the most common one. That is, you know, a high fiber product where the fiber is put in to neutralize the sugar. So maybe we'd have a better Health Star rating in a few years' time. But unfortunately, these things take a heck of a long time to come through the system.
Do you think more people are picking up these diets that we don't really know a lot about in the long term because of social media?
Well, I think social media contributes an enormous amount, because you have some people going onto social media saying, this is fantastic, I lost 20 kgs through going on a keto diet. And I don't disbelieve that at all. I know people who've lost 20 kgs on a keto diet, but what I'm saying is the majority of them don't, it doesn't last. There are other ways to achieving weight loss which are healthier, which have been shown to have long-term benefit, and which are not potentially risky.
Do you think this is somewhere the government needs to step in, or they just probably won't touch it?
Well, it's very difficult to step into this because, I mean, I have no evidence that it's harmful. I'm just saying we have no evidence that it's doing any good. We have some evidence. I mean, there are some people that have been referred to me who developed very high cholesterol levels on a high keto diet, scarily high cholesterol levels, but not everybody. So there's so many unknowns, but I can't see government stepping in terms of a keto diet just yet. I mean, I think the main thing that I would go for the keto diet is I believe there are false claims being made for it, because, as I say, there is no long-term evidence that it works for a lot of people, but it works for some people. I've seen, you know, people do well on it. But there are some other things the government could be doing immediately that I'd like to see them doing, and they haven't done too much yet.
What are these things?
Well, I mean, the main thing I would like to see, I'd like to see a compulsory school program being introduced, because we've got a lot of evidence left over from the last Labour government, which introduced this hee-haw program, that schools that have maintained hee-haw or a variation of it, even decile one schools, where we know you'd see an awful lot of obesity, have actually had fabulous results when they've stuck to the old hee-haw program. So I'd like to see that introduced immediately, and I think there would be enormous support from the public for that.
What is the hee-haw program?
Okay. Let me explain what the hee-haw program is. You've got to be about 9 years old. You've got to have been around for at least 9 years, a bit older than, I don't think a 10-year-old would know too much about hee-haw, right? You've got to have been full of adults for 9 years the last Labour government introduced a program which was called Healthy Eating, Healthy Action, which was really a compulsory healthy lifestyle program for schools. So you couldn't have junk food served in schools. There was a big program about introducing school gardens. The program extended beyond the schools itself into the communities associated with the schools. There was a physical activity element built around it, and it was compulsory. So schools, for example, couldn't send their kids out to go and sell chocolates in the neighborhood to raise money. So it was an overall package that was abandoned by the last national government within a couple of weeks of it coming into power. And it wasn't even evaluated. We weren't even allowed to evaluate it. So that's the kind of program we want to see again. And the government has said that they're working on such a program, but we don't know the extent to which it will be compulsory. We haven't actually seen it yet. And we can but hope that it will be good. The benefits of this are not just to the school kids themselves, but it radiates out into their family, their whānau, the community at large, and it was a pretty good program. I admit some bias in that I was involved in it, but I really thought it was great, and as I say, we can see in the remnants of it for some schools that have maintained it, the benefits of that program.
While I'm sure advertising does have a big part to play in sort of the what food people choose to eat. But is it also an issue of a lot of unhealthy food is just so much cheaper than, and more accessible?
That's a brilliant question. And there's been a lot of work done, not by me, but by people that I know, looking at the price of food. And from what I can gather, the one food that is really comes into the category of, not great food, that is cheaper, is cheap fish and chips. I mean, you can have very healthy fish, relatively healthy fish and chips, but cheap fish and chips where you get more batter than you, well, a lot more batter than you get fish. And that can be cheaper in many places. I think the work's mainly been done in Auckland. But on the whole, the other convenience food is not necessarily cheaper in dollar terms. But where it is particularly attractive to a number of people, particularly people who are not well off, is that it is cheaper in terms of time. Mm. If you've got families where, parents are doing more than one job, actually food preparation can take longer. And that, I think, is a problem. So, if you are a mum or a dad who's got kids, and you finish one job, you've got to feed your kids and then go out to another job, yes, it may well be advantageous. So it's not so much in the dollar terms as in the actual time. If you've got the time to cook up decent food, you can actually do it quite cheap.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.